I'm here to tell you about Naptime Radio. It's a show for moms and dads, and these chicks are super cool.
Mac Daddy and Damia.
And they want you to listen.
Yes, we want it. We want it so bad.
I know you do. Heather and Kate offer helpful info for parents with their power naps. Oh, and did I mention? These chicks are sexy as hell, y'all.
Let's ride that train.
All I need is a ticket.
Let's eliminate one article of clothing for one meal. How about that?
Oh, now it's a party. So go to naptimeradio.com or click on the logo available on our site.
Nailed it!
Chase the sun.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 11. With me this week is a guest we've been working on for, I think it's well over a year now that since I first met this wonderful guy. You've heard him on SiriusXM, Bob and Tom Radio, seen him all over the place. James P. Connolly is here with us today. Thanks for being on the show again, James.
It's, you know what? It's this is my standard year delay is what I do. Somebody asked me, even if I'm available, I put people off. So consider yourself blessed because I've pushed guys two, three
years. I appreciate
years. There's podcasts that have opened and then shut down. And then I call and I go, you know, I'm available.
And it's too bad. We stopped doing shows, James. We're not doing those anymore.
I'm like, well, you're lost, man. I'm a busy guy.
How old is your son now?
He is now 20 months. And now I can tell as I swept through the toys on the ground here, and now I know I'm a dad. I was noticing there's a headless Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And there, as a father, my first thought was, ah, too bad he broke his toy. As a superhero fan, I thought, oh my God, the Earth is now unprotected.
Right?
Because Green Lantern is
at least this sector.
I was going to say, so we right now, this is the most dangerous podcast I've participated in.
I know. So. And it's funny too, because the level of superhero toy, I have two boys, and everybody's aware of my two boys. So they, now my mom bought Little People. You know, the little people like Fisher Price has Green Lantern as well, and Batman and all those. So now they're indoctrinating them even at a younger age as if it was necessary. Is your son into superheroes at all?
Well, interestingly enough, his name is Parker. Uh-huh. One of the reasons he was named Parker is, you know, when my wife and I were talking to our other nephew, and he came out one day in a Spider-Man outfit, and his mask was up. And, of course, we said, oh, look at you, Spider-Man. He goes, no, I'm Peter Parker. And we laughed because they said Parker. Like it was so weird. That's a cool name.
That's a great name.
We kicked all these names around and my son was born. I said, you know, we have all these names and we thought about tribute to people in our family. And I kept saying, not only is Parker cool, but someday I can tell him, you know, son, you're named partially after the spectacular Spider-Man. And there's not a lot of people that can say that.
No.
So he has not only that, but my father recently had a medical procedure he has to go through, and he involves getting some radioactivity in him. And he's explaining this to me. Now, hold the thought. And he said, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to be radioactive for like 2 weeks, and so I have to stay away from small children. And I said, Dad, let me explain to you how this works. This is how superheroes get made.
Yeah.
I said, you're not staying away from small children. I want you to bite my son. And I just keep biting him until something special happens.
But because he's not a radioactive spider, I think he will just have the powers of an old person.
Well, that's what we're working on. I don't know how it's going to work.
You never know.
It's uncharted territory. Yeah. So my theory is just bite and then wait. Yeah. And if my son starts screaming, just understand that daddy loves you. Yeah. And he's trying to make you a superhero. Yeah.
Just hope that his powers don't have to wait till he's post-pubescent.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm going to ask my dad, what are you good at? What would you claim? Yeah. If you had a strength, what would you do other than hitting me in the back of the head as a child? Other than, is my son going to strike me with the same force that you did? No, that's what we're working on right now.
So. Which is a great turnaround for your son. Then he returns the discipline every time. He's like, Dad, it's a reflex. With great power comes great responsibility.
He's going to hit me and go, why does that feel so familiar? That's the beating my father used to give me. But you're so much stronger than he is.
So
we got
glowing
that, we
in
got
the
that
corner.
Out. Yeah, we got that going on.
Well, I don't like. It's funny. Like I was even talking about it last week that we just got my son into preschool, and all the kids there are into superheroes. It seems to be. I get accused because I'm kind of a nerd, but. I looked at comic books a little bit when I was a kid, but it wasn't that big a deal. And I get accused of like ingraining that into my son. And I tell you, like, it's almost been the other way around, like where he started liking it. And I'm like, well, if you like this, watch the stuff that I used to look at when I was a kid. He's got, and there's some kind of nerd that lives within him because when I turn on an episode of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from the 90s that I watched when I was a kid, he was like, what? Like he was reborn. Like he was like, oh my God. He was singing the song every time he played. And there's all this, you know, interesting stuff. But I just think, and it's funny to watch when people like, because I know that there's this progressive thing about gender roles within kids. Like, are you shouldn't force your son to be more like do manly things, or if he wants to play with dolls, you're supposed
to. Oh,
really?
Well, I'm new with this. Maybe I should stop doing that. I've been shaving him. Is that wrong?
No.
Every
not
morning
in my
I've been shaving him, slapping some Aqua Velva. Right. He's not two yet. Okay, is that wrong? All right, now I'm new. I'm back. I'm open to suggestions.
Making him pull a jet ski by his teeth across the channel.
Obviously, you read books and you talk to people. I go with my gut. I'm a gut father.
You go to any preschool, and I feel like it's like a little microcosm of what is what we are at the base of who we are. Like, I think that we're accommodating to all these anomalies because here's what I see at the preschool. You see all the girls on one side of the playground all chatting in a circle, usually doing some kind of communal activity of digging and everything like that. All the boys are like, and my son was the new person of the pack, which was a really weird feeling for me. And all the kids instantly started making fun of him, like making, not even like attacking him because they're not even good at that. Like they just, so like one point this kid goes, why do your shoes have holes in them? And because he was wearing like Batman Crocs is what my son had on.
Sweet.
And he goes, so this is so air can get to my feet. So my feet don't get too hot is what my son said. And then he goes, and the kid just looked at him and he was like, nye, 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 and then ran away. Like, my son kind of sat there like, what the fuck just happened?
You see, this is a perfect time. This is another way to start a superhero.
All right.
He goes to school.
Uh-huh.
Day one, he's ostracized.
Okay.
He comes home. You communicate to your son that he's been emotionally damaged and that someday he will pay these children back. So you begin the process.
I'm making a supervillain
for
your son to fight.
Exactly.
Oh.
So what you need to do, and then maybe send him to school one day with a cape. For no reason.
For no reason
just
at all.
A cape at all. I just begin.
Or does it, and it has to be some kind of purple cape, something he get made fun of to further build his hate for people.
You feel free to freestyle this as much as you want.
All right, you're right. I appreciate you not boxing me in.
No, this is a superhero kit.
Yeah.
It's what I've got to open to any father to manipulate as they want to shape their son. And if at some point your son does not have what it takes to be a hero, then you can mutate into an evil villain who was a failed superhero and now can use that as a backstory
because
he failed with the original. There's a win-win for every
job. We should start writing this down. I don't know why we're just talking. It's a recorded. We don't need to worry about
it. This is someday I'm going to sit my son down. I'm just going to open up a briefcase like click, click. And obviously you need something glowing. Glowing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it needs to, like an orb or some device.
Yeah.
And just tell him that in here lies your power.
Yeah.
And then when he says, well, Daddy, what is my power? See, that's the thing. We don't know.
No, we don't.
You need to find it within you. Something bullshit.
Send him like, much
Miyagi.
Like Superman had to go to the Antarctica or whatever to find out.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that you put your son in any kind of a spacecraft and fire him into the air.
Why?
Well, it's been done, first of all.
Yeah, it's true. You're sure. We don't want to be hacky with our...
And you don't want to end up with like a Balloon Boy episode either. So we really... You need to be pointed in your... And I also believe in the superhero. The foundation of the superhero should be more in the root for the pain. You know, gone are the days of other planetary stuff. We need emotionally damaged superheroes.
Real deal, homie feel. Like, have any. I guess Batman would be the closest to an emotionally damaged.
Well, my point is...
Which is what I thought you were going to say. I thought we were going to have to fake his mother's and my death. Wow, that's pretty harsh.
We're not going
to
fake it, Justin.
Oh, boy.
I just think that, you know, emotionally damaged children, and I'm not suggesting you do this, but feel free to do this.
It kind of sounds like you are, but
well,
you keep saying you're not.
It's a focus group. I'm trying to tell you. What I'm saying is, rather than take your emotionally damaged children, and you will damage them, no matter what you
do. It's a given.
Rather than spend money on therapy, may I suggest you spend money on an outfit, a superhero outfit, and tell them this is the way in which you, in a healthy manner, repair the damage that I've done to you.
Yeah.
You take it out on society. Very simple.
You decide good or bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Net cost to me, zero.
Right.
Cost to society, depending on how much damage my son does.
Or which way he goes. Exactly. And if you think about it, the odds are going to say that, you know, even comic books show us that 50% are going to be good, 50% are going to be bad. So it's going to be a wash. You know what I mean? You're going to have half being crime fighters, half being crimers,
and
I guess.
And I'm confident that argument would also stand up in a court of law.
Yeah.
Accused. And I said, well, we taught him good.
Yeah.
And at some point, he became evil.
Is that really?
Not really our fault.
Not our problem.
No.
I like when I think this, your plan to make my son the supervillain to your superhero son is might work because he came downstairs from his nap today and I was watching a movie and it was just like wrapping up or whatever and he's like, where's the bad guy? I want to see the bad guy. Right. And I'm like, what's going on there that he was upset? Who's the bad guy in this? And
here's a way to help move this along a little
okay.
further. When your son's sleeping, mm-hmm. and if he doesn't sleep heavily, you can heavily medicate him with Benadryl.
Okay, yes.
Not suggesting.
I've
just thrown it out there.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
Shave his head.
Really?
He wakes up in the morning
uh-huh.
for no reason. He sees a Lex Luthor type child in there.
Oh.
And he, again, you're just getting inside his head,
yeah.
convincing him that he's truly evil.
Yeah.
You might want to run this by your wife.
Nah. No. She's very hands off.
Yeah.
I'm the primary care. I'm the stay at home dad. She doesn't need to be involved because she's going to muck it up, I think.
And if you're going to create a superhero, it's really a one person job.
Yeah.
Your vision, your plan.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree.
I don't need a mama's boy for a supervillain. Nobody likes that. That's,
I don't know what his power would be.
Because here's the thing. If I'm going to make a supervillain, I want him to be pure evil. I don't want him to play that misunderstood card. I know that is bullshit. I want real
choice.
Deal home feel like I'm out to kill. You
it's
know
a
what
strong
mean?
Choice. It's
yeah.
a strong choice.
I want him to be like a Christopher Nolan bad guy, like that kind of vibe, like Heath Ledger's Joker, where it's real crazy, not just, I'm a clown. Ha-ha. No. I want him to really hurt people, I think.
Good. Good for you. Good for you. I want to get noticed.
I feel good. Thank you.
You know,
thank you, James. I appreciate you helping me out with this.
Every parent, I think, has to help. I don't want to say choose the path, but we can guide the path.
Right.
And you know, I'm all for it. Gender roles, sure, fine. Let them find their way.
Yeah.
But good and evil,
right?
I think we should be able to guide them down the path.
A little bit. That's, well, and a guide them, they're going to show you what they're into. You right. know what I mean? Like, my son is into bad guys, so it makes natural sense. All I'm doing is, you know, paving a path. So now, instead of buying him action figures and things like that, I need to start introducing him to things like explosives and household right. chemicals and teaching them, you know, teaching him chemistry and robotics, I think, and stuff like
and
that.
And some sort of a hook. Like, what's his shtick? Who is
yeah.
he? At some point, he needs a persona. An identity.
Yeah.
So we need to.
I wonder what that would be.
A random bad guy, you know. But I mean, the shaved head, the Joker face, the water.
Oh, we combine them all.
It's been done, but I'm just saying, you gotta, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You give him the tools. Like, it's just, I think it's very similar to comedy in that you look at, everybody grows up with some kind of influence comedically. You know what I mean? So you show him the Lex Luthers of the world. You show him a little Doc Ock.
Now,
you know, maybe
way,
give him a backpack with the dryer vents hanging off of it or something.
Now, that's a funny guy. Lex Luthor. That was my comedic influence, by the way. That was,
he's hilarious.
Huge Luthor live at the Madison Square Garden.
Oh, gosh. If I only could count the times that I hid in a closet listening to that album. I stole it from my dad, and I just listened to that again. And again, him, you know, like a pulpit, he was up there just spreading his word. Oh,
the only downside was he was a physical comedian, didn't translate well to the albums.
No.
I thought it was, a lot of silence.
No. And, you know, and I think that, you know, today's generation wouldn't have the patience to try to imagine that visually either in their heads. You know what I mean? They can't imagine the things he could build. And
what a great concept album for comedy. Imagine what this guy could be doing. Just an hour.
Theater of the mind.
Theater of the mind.
No crowd.
Playing the record. No, maybe a couple people are not going, yeah. That was awesome.
Friends of
it. Every now and then, but it's really like, what could he be doing?
Yeah.
That would be an amazing.
I think you might be describing my comedy albums, actually.
It's okay.
Just a couple people in the crowd.
Easy to produce, low budget, not a lot of writing involved.
No.
This is a great concept comedy album.
Just even, you could take it really ethereal, just go silence and let them fill in the jokes and what's funny to them.
Every now and then, maybe just like a glass breaking. Someone saying, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Just hear people.
Or a fart noise.
Exactly.
Or just if you want to go lowbrow.
Sure, go lowbrow. It's great. Comedy concept album. No, really, the concept's up to you.
Yeah,
it's
on you if you
we're
don't get it.
Pressure on you.
I feel like that would be extreme alternative. Like, that's
it
probably
is.
The
it
next
is
level of comedy is to go extreme with it. Well, what I was saying is that too. That with my son going to preschool, your kid is. Does he go to preschool at all, or no? Not too young, or
he's too young right now.
Yeah,
we're
20
just,
months on.
Yeah, we're
sorry.
Just kind of molding his mind.
Well, I had this thing where my son, he's 3 and a half, he'll be 4 soon, and when we had the second kid, it was really hard for me to get him outdoors, let him play, let him be a boy and stuff like that. I was really busy with the baby, and I couldn't get nap times to match up, and I opened the minivan, taking him to the grocery store, and the sun came in, he's like, oh, the sun. I go, what's wrong? He goes, I don't like the sun. I'm like, oh, this can't. this is not a good thing. So I was like, I got to get him into a preschool is what I thought would be. He could learn a little something, get to socialize with other kids.
He could learn about the sun.
Yeah.
The benefits of the sun.
Vitamin D is really all say, I need you to cover, teach.
Why do your son has rickets? Wow. The sun.
He hates it. And it's so funny to be paying. So my preschool costs $600 a month for him to go for 3 hours, 3 days a week. I haven't done the math yet on the what per hour that is because I'm afraid. Right. But it's just interesting for me because I go in there as a parent, but then I also have like the comedian mind that kind of pulls back and watches you do what you naturally do. And I'm sitting there going, trying to cowtail to these people that I'm giving a large sum of money to. Like if you went into a restaurant and dropped $600, you'd be like, yeah, this steak is going to be cooked perfect, you know? But you go into a preschool and you're like, please don't judge me. Please don't tell me that my kid is operating at a maximum level of potential and developmentally.
I think that's your pitch should be is, look, how much money would it take for you to tell me every time I walk in here that my child is a genius? Is it $800? $1,000? Just to alleviate the anxiety. Say, how's it going? Well, the preschool says he's a freaking genius.
So
I don't argue with them.
There's a part of me that kind of feels like that's what public education is doing now. I'm not sure, but I think there might be that. But it's even funnier, too, is that I go there, so he dropped him off. We did the transition. There's a whole courtship dancing thing that you have to do where they go. Because some schools are like, yeah, just bring him by if you want to hang out with him for a day, and then he's cooled and you can leave. But this school was like, well, we do the week before he starts. He comes by, plays during playtime, and then you come back the next day. We try him out during, like, the quote-unquote class time. And then go from there, we decide where he needs to be. And we're like, oh, okay. And so after the first day of class time, I go, they were excusing everybody to go have a snack. Well, he didn't have a snack because he was only there for class time or whatever. And he's like, I said, well, we're going to go now, buddy. And he's like, we got to go. And he gets, like, upset. Like, he's going to throw a fit. And I'm like, great. This is great. So I take him back the next day. He's got his lunch. Everything goes awesome. You know, and so I ask at the end. I go, how did he do today? They're like, oh, great. And I want to almost say to him, no, really. How did it? I don't want to don't blow sunshine up my ass.
Right. Isn't there a private room we actually have this discussion?
Did you have like a champagne room version?
Great. Come here, Justin. We need to talk to you about what really
Not happens. In front of Jacob. Not he doesn't great. Need
You did great today, honey. You're awesome. Yeah, we need to talk
And then it's funny, too, because they want you to bring snacks, but then there are rules to the snacks. Like you can't, they go, no chips, no chocolate, which I think is hilarious because my wife's reaction was, I think they're a little strict. And I knew instantly that it wasn't because of what they're – because she barks at the kids just as bad as they were. But it's because of the food, the chips and the chocolate. Because my wife, as a metabolist, she can eat whatever the hell she wants and it doesn't affect her. So she thinks the kids have half of that, which is probably true. But she just feeds them junk food and is like, that's part of living. Chocolate is a joy that we have the right to as Americans. I think it's –
I believe we fought a war for that.
I'm pretty sure.
That's what slavery was about.
Yeah.
I go back and look at the history books. Wasn't it the South who wanted to deny chocolate to the people?
Really.
I'm dancing on a very thin line here.
And then a black guy invented peanut butter, and the world was a better place.
I think that's the history lesson of the day. I come here to learn history.
Which is the real reason why I'm like, we got to get this kid in school because he's got half your brain. And so it was just interesting because I'm making these snacks that I have to go out and buy special things for because now I know these teachers are opening up his lunchbox and going, oh, look at what Jacob's dad did. And it's like there's all this level of where it kind of exposes you psychologically of what you're afraid of. Because I'm like, well, I hope this snack meets their appeal. Like, I want them to go, look at this. Look at what Mr. Warsham made for his kid.
We're not saying he's the smartest kid in the room, but look at his snack. Yeah. He's obviously, it's not the food's fault that he's behind. It's definitely the parents. Because this food should make a super child.
And the teachers even talk about when they do projects that the parents actually do the projects so that their kid looks good. Like, that's the level it comes to.
This is, my father did not believe in that theory.
Yeah.
And we had, we were young, and my brother was in the, I think, Cub Scouts or something. Pinewood Derby. Old school.
Yes.
The kit was designed by a man who didn't want a child to succeed.
or have all their fingers without wounds.
We have the car. My father completely, shouldered the, no, this is your project. I will help you with this, but you are doing the project. I remember my brother painting this horribly awkward triangular thing and putting like fishing weights in there for balance. And it looked like, obviously this wasn't done by the brightest tool in the shed. No pun intended. And so my father, very proud in his lesson he taught his son, this is your vehicle. Be proud of your vehicle. And, of course, we get to the great race, the Pinewood Derby, and it's like all these engineer fathers have just completely gone the other way. And it's okay to teach your child a lesson with this caveat. if all the other fathers, the lesson you're teaching your kid is your car sucks. Now, they went up there, and my dad, he's thinking at least half the fathers would agree with me. None of them agreed with my father. There's the cars get up there. They all look like these smooth, rounded edge, shiny jet engines. And my brother's, you know, looks like the Flintstone mobile. And they get up there, and they, you know, Pinewood Derby. It's a gravity drop. So they release the thing, and all these cars shoot. And my brother's car basically doesn't move. So the humiliation. And my father at that point was like, "I'm an idiot. I teach my son a lesson, and all I did was publicly humiliate him in front of Pac 24.
That's the best.
So, it's the best. So I remember my father to this day is like, you know, the lesson's sound, the execution was wrong.
Yeah.
He goes, I should have at least jumped in a little bit. Yeah. You know? But my brother did make the best car he could.
He could.
He was competing against a grown man, basically, who were helping.
Was your brother or your dad ever process that to him, like, or explain it to him, like, hey, you didn't, you know?
Yeah, no, I think he still, you know, I'm sure he's a good father. He attempted to reinforce the lesson. Yeah. But, you know, if you look at the balance of, he probably was like, well, you know, son, you did the best you could, and you did this, and the other fathers were wrong in creating those sleek, fast vehicles that made their sons happy.
Yeah.
What I did was teach you a feeling that these children won't have, and the feeling of the utter lack of confidence in their fathers, which I think is the lesson my brother got, was that dad is really wrong a lot of times, and particularly on a public stage.
Yeah.
So a private dad may have his game. Public dad, not so much.
Here's what your dad should have said. You know what, son? I'm teaching you a lesson that most men don't learn until they're into their 30s, and it's that your father's not Superman.
Exactly.
I'm not perfect. Well, I'm flawed.
But as a slightly younger brother, the lesson I took from this is never ask my father for help for the Pinewood Derby. Go to the neighbor's father who has tools.
My father hates me.
Like, look, I know you're not my dad, but would you help me build a fast car? I mean, my dad can be there, but I don't want him touching this thing. I've seen his work.
So. I think I've talked about this on the show before, but my dad only had one project. My dad sat there. He made me get a paper out when I was 9 years old because he wanted me to have a job, have my own money. If I had a pager and a phone line, I paid my own bill. I think he even made me chip in for the cable bill, which I think might be illegal or should be, and definitely by today's standards. But anyway, we did a simple machines segment, I think it's seventh grade. And we had to make, each of us had to make a simple machine, and mine was some kind of trajectory or something, which I don't even think is a simple machine. But anyway, so the idea was to find a way to launch a tennis ball as far as you could. So I came home and said, hey, Dad, I need to use some of your wood. And he's like, for what? I go, a school project. He's like, well, what kind of wood is it for? And I go, I have to launch a tennis ball. Now, to my father, your father might be, great, I'm going to sit back. I'll teach him how to use a tool. Not my father. My father's like, well, we're about to kick some kids' ass.
Yeah.
that's what that part of his brain kicked in. And here's the best part of it is that, which was great because normally people would have been like, wow, Justin's so smart. Look how far, you know, his tennis ball shot. But my dad actually showed, my dad had his own little maintenance and contracting business. So he actually showed up with the two guys that worked for him to set it up. Like, I just stood there like this, like the poor teacher's looking at him like, this poor kid. Cause I was just sitting there while my dad set it up. All I did was use the scissors to cut the string to launch the tennis ball,
right,
which went easily the distance of the football field, which was three times where they'd set the limit of how far this will be measured. You know?
I just pictured like your dad's show. Go, yeah, it's Justin's project, but his logo is on the side. Trademark, copyright. This is obviously, you can't.
It's a little lawnmower business if you need your yard done.
Justin was in the conceptual phases in which he was in the meeting.
Did quality assurance make sure we met all your parameters that you set forth?
Honestly, ribbon cutting is a ceremonial job given to people that can't do anything.
He's very political. He's the face of what we do here at Worsham Trajectories.
Worsham Trajectory Planet. Justin's not allowed to touch the tool. We here at Worsham Trajectories have launched tennis balls for generations. Worsham Trajectory.
Since 1992.
Since 1992. The first projectile was launched by Jedediah Worsham during this Revolutionary War. Coal was thrown 57 feet. Worsham Trajectory.
Yeah. Was. Well, my other favorite thing about this preschool is that we go there, and it's funny how it works out. Like, I'm kind of glad I'm the parent that I am because I'm not super worried or freaked out about stuff, you know, like as much as I get worried about the lunch, but I also have this weird side of me that, like, so we show up and I bring my youngest son, who's a year. Natalie was there with us, and we go through the playtime or whatever, and all the little girls want to see the baby, and they're all petting the baby, but they're all filthy, like every last one of them. So you have this weird thing of like, am I being overprotected? Is it weird to not say, hey, get your...
No, but for the record,
yeah,
every child is filthy except yours. That's what I'm learning. That's, all children are dirty, you see except the, everyone has the look of children are dirty. Well, not you, but it's not always... It's
you
like,
never see your kid's runny nose.
No,
or,
and so that's why, it's also the same with the comedian. Who's a hack? Well, the people that are not here, they're hacks, not us. We're obviously...
We're
original, and our children are squeaky clean, but your filthy children can come to my house, and then when you're done, I hose my son down like he's been exposed to radioactivity. Not the kind you get bitten by, but the other kind.
It's so true, because, well, and then there was a girl, there's a little girl, and I felt so horrible for thinking it, but like there was a little girl who kept patting my son's hand, and I know that there was a girl that I went to school with that had a similar thing where it's like it causes your skin to dry out and kind of become scaly and scab.
Psoriasis.
So this little girl had, you have it too?
Yeah.
So she had
can I hold your hand?
Yeah. Well, I don't even know how it's transmitted or anything.
It's not communicable.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So because that's what
it would be a super villain. It's touch you and you're instantly scaly. That's like a lizard man. I think pretty much,
Well, this little girl's petting my son's hand, and I just see her. She's like maybe two, and I see her poor, scabby hands, and I'm sitting there going, oh, my God. Like I'm kind of like, and then I kind of have that, again, you have this part of you that looks back and sees the whole thing happening, and I laugh at it, and I'm like, how funny is it that on the first day my kid comes to preschool, there's what in my stupid brain is like a leper, like touching my kid, and like, he's so cute.
You want to go, excuse me, who owns scabby hands? Which one of you created the scab child?
Can I get any kind of teacher?
Can I donate a glove? Do we have gloves for these children?
Some lotion. This
some
girl
lotion.
Is ashy.
I know.
And, well, like, and then Natalie and I kind of have a knowing glance towards each other, and we see you do the adult talking in front of the kids with your eyes, and then right on cue from right behind my wife, there's a girl that has grabbed my youngest son's sippy cup and is drinking out of it. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not a big deal. I'm not a germophobic. And then immediately has some kind of whooping tuberculosis type sound come out. Like an 80-year-old who's been smoking for 76 years. And I was like, that at that point, we just start laughing. We're just like, well, we're here. Here we go.
Every day is a balance between education and disease.
Yeah.
That's pretty much school. 50% of the time is learning. 50% is trying not to die.
Yeah. And I've seen after watching the class time, I really think that preschool is just like some kind of boost for their immune system to go into public education. That you send them into some kind of viral petri dish to just try and come out alive, and that only the strong will survive and have perfect attendance.
Learning is a bonus. Yeah. I think learning is like
it's icing on the cake.
We just expose you to the other dirty children.
And my son woke up today from his nap after being at his second day of preschool, and he was like, my mouth is burning. And I'm like, that's not a disease. Like, what did you...
Let's Google that. You are making this up, is what you're doing right
exactly,
now.
Exactly. It's funny because he's very articulate, but at the same time, it's like he says weird things, like which could mean he just has a sore throat. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's weird to like you go to school for 2 days, you come back, your mouth is burning. I don't know. I think he got an STD.
I enjoy the diagnostic troubleshooting. It's like a science experiment to me. And my wife is more with angst. To me, it's more like, you know, it could be this. I feel like an episode of House where I emotionally detach from my own son and I go, well, it could be rabies, but I'm going to go ahead and guess. And then her attitude is we should do something. And I'm like, no, we need to let it play out. And that's where I feel callous. But it's like I am House going, well, we could just give him some a cup of vinegar and see what happens and eliminate the fact that that's not what's killing him. And I'm all about inducing, you know, so, and that's where we differ. I mean, we both have the same goal, I believe, which is his best interest. But I am so much more like,
that's a very fatherly thing to do, like, where it's kind of rub some dirt on it-esque, but you're just like, well, we got to let it play out. Otherwise, we're not going to learn anything. We got to figure out what he can handle. And
even physically, like, you know, she sees him get hurt and immediately goes to a place of fear.
Yeah.
Something horrible happened. And I'm thinking, well, that saves me from teaching him about gravity.
Yeah.
Because that lesson sticks.
Yeah.
My son used to go to the edge of the bed and just fearless. I mean, as a guy, I'm like, I respect you. You know no fear. However, you know no fear because you don't know anything.
Yeah, you're dumb.
And you're going to learn. And I tried to teach him about the edge. He would run full speed to the edge of the bed and smile and just like know that I'm going to catch him. And I'm going, how do I teach my son that daddy's hand is not always readily available.
Yeah.
So you talk to him and you talk to him. And then, you know, one day he's up on the second bed and we're walking away and we're like, stay there. Don't roll off or you will, you know, ow. And he's smart. He gets it.
Yeah.
I step in the kitchen. You hear this. Hook, thick, hook, boom. And, you know, he's screaming. And I'm going, honey, you rolled off. He hit this head, hit the side here. He hit that ground.
Now you're no longer Dr. House. You're Horatio.
What I'm saying is it was broken. The fall was broken. He's not bleeding. Consider this a very fortunate lesson. Well, you know, little knucklehead. Yeah. Figured, well, this must be an anomaly. Did it again. Second time, I looked at him like, what did daddy tell you? Now my son knows what the edge is.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought him a little slide. Again, he's a guy. He went down the slide. Then he looks at me and he goes, up. And I go, no. You don't go up the slide. You go down or you'll hurt yourself. And he looks at me and he goes, up. And I'm going, no. He walks up the slide. He succeeds. I'm like, good for you. But I said, this will not always work. Second time up, slip, bam, hits his face, falls down, cries. I'm like, owie, remember daddy said don't go up. Now I'm standing there watching him do this. And I'm going, but here's what I do. I go, that's a 2.5-foot fall. My son can handle this on grass. This is a lesson. My son, then he climbs up the backside. And he goes down. I go, no, you clamp up this.
Yeah.
He dangles his foot. My son looks at me like, I'm going to do it anyway. And I look at him like, daddy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And so he dangled back, lost his balance, looked at me like, how could you let this happen to me? Tumbled down the back and fell. Looks at me and I'm going, I'm down at his eye level going, what do we learn here today? Up, down, not the other way around. And now when my son climbs up, he looks at me and he goes, slide, not up. And I go, bingo, little man. And I go, my work is done, everybody. I'm out today. It's like, those to me.
He's going to the school of hard knocks, literally.
My wife had this guy. I come from the theory of acceptable risk.
Yes.
I believe in the, you know, mitigated risk theory in that this will not kill him. We've set up safe parameters.
Yep.
I'm okay with everything that happens inside this box.
Yes.
In terms of flipping, tumbling, banging, you know, my wife says, you know, it hurts him. And I go, yes, but understand, he is the most pliable and recoverable. This is the time to hurt
him.
Because now he'll shake. This is like, it's like a lizard. You rip the tail. It's again. That's how it happens. Right? We'll never get this time again.
Yeah.
You know, if I fell out of bed, there's a bruise and there's a couple of days of, wow, man, that hip is still killing me. I fell out of bed. He'll fall, hit his head, 15 seconds of crying. We explain what happens. He explains back to us. He does dramatizations, which is hysterical too. Yeah. He'll go back and relive the, I was there, but ooh, you nailed the emotions. And then it's over. And I thought to myself, this is a brilliant learning curve. So for me, fatherhood is basically, it's the privilege of science.
Mm-hmm.
In my own home,
yes.
24 hours a day, watching him apply logic, and I'm going, well, critically thinking, brilliant application. In real world, not so much. Yeah. Learning trash is a great concept to watch a kid understand. You know, yes, that goes in the garbage. Good for you. Drop it in. Don't reach in and take it back out. Then you open your garbage. You go, what the hell is my measuring tape doing in the garbage? Who gave him the measuring tape? Why is my... I'm going in the garbage now. Going, I can't find my shoe. You know what? Yeah, okay. Not garbage. And then I'm looking at him going, how can I communicate to my son what is and what is not garbage except for taking it out of the garbage going, no garbage, daddy, shoe. And then I feel like I'm talking like an American Indian going, buffalo roam in house, shoe garbage, no, owie. And I'm like, okay.
Have you ever called your kid like a dog on accident? I've done that where I'm like, come here, come on. Like, oh, that's horrible.
On accident?
Oh, yeah.
There's two things that work in my house.
Okay.
The fact that I have a very loud, deep voice.
Uh-huh.
The Marine Corps background helps. Mm-hmm. When I have an octave that I'll hit deep that will send my dog and son shaking. I've only done it once to my son because he was about to really hurt himself. And I just bellowed very loud and very sharp, hey, as deep and loud as I could. And he just froze and almost started crying. And my first thought was, see what I just did?
Damn right.
As you see, you hear what that? Daddy's got more game than that. Because that... I believe with a dog and a kid, there has to be a level of voice. Just, and you can't go that often.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hit it, everybody freezes and they realize
something's wrong. Yeah.
But I had to like stop smiling because he's crying and I'm going, see that?
Damn Skippy.
Yeah. Daddy loves you, but watch daddy emotionally he has from you. And that's the gift of the Marine Corps background is I have the ability to emotionally detach in a heartbeat and just look at my son and go, daddy doesn't exist right now. This is the man who's going to put you in your crib and walk away.
Come here, you little bus-filled man.
but I have, I know, I'm stressed. The kid running the dog, things are happening, and I'm just like, trying to yell at both of them. Yeah. And sometimes I can't shift gears. Yeah. So it is just like the snap or the, like, I'm like, yo, come here. Yeah, little, you, two of you, shut it now. I'll grab each of them with a free hand and hold them both out and go, look at each other. You two, shut it down. And I'm going to leash one of you and throw one in the crib, and I haven't decided which one's going where. You two work it out.
Figure it out. I'm out of here.
I believe in a level of crazy. My father was brilliant at this. He was a very calm man, mm-hmm. but he had a level, a gear, that when he hit, we called it, he just went Mano on us. And at that level, all bets were off.
Mano was what you called it?
Yeah, he just went maniacal.
Oh, it's got kind of, it.
Because, and at that moment, I realized it's brilliant because as a parent, you have to draw the line for your children.
Mm-hmm.
And you can draw it reasonably. That's one way to do it.
Sure.
Or you can draw the line based on the fact that when something happens and you get basically that look, it's not quite hulking out because there's not gamma rays involved, but there has to be a moment where your children have to realize at this moment, that man that you're looking at is not your father.
Nope.
There's not love emanating from that body. This is a man who's come to shut this down, and everyone better run for the hills. And when my father did that, my brother and I would be fighting, and he explained to us that we're not going to fight anymore. We were like teenagers. And he said, I don't have time to figure out right and wrong. So he goes, but let me explain to you what's going to happen. I'm going to come in your room, and I'm going to hit the first kid I see. And then you'll stop fighting. I guarantee it. So my brother and I were fighting. We'd hear my dad in the other room go, God damn it. And his feet would start pounding. And now, instead of fighting each other, we were now jockeying for position in our room, pushing each other towards the door. Because the minute he came in, he's grabbing. And sometimes it was almost like, no, I didn't do. And but you're the hand that got had.
But he started.
And then my father, who didn't strike us that often, but he had his college ring. And so in the back of our head was Stonehill College, class of 1954. He would just, and you'd hit, and so my brother, I realized as an adult, what a brilliant thing he set up. He's like, he set us against each other. He got exactly what he wanted when he had to intervene. And we understood that this was not a talking dad. This was a dad who came to stop things.
That's a solid, I'm glad you put that way, because I've recently kind of had this, I guess, quote unquote, awakening where I go, you know, my father, you did some really weird, like crazy stuff, but I used to have a lot of fear that my son wouldn't understand how much I loved him for whatever reason, right?
You know what? You need to let go of that.
Don't need that.
Daddy loves you,
yeah.
But I also want to look at him and go, Daddy loves you. And then the minute mom walks out, go, look at Daddy. See these eyes? These are the eyes of a 1,000-yard death stare. And Daddy will hold this till the day he dies.
And so. Did your dad have any kind of military background,
too? My father was a Marine.
Okay.
And he handed that down to me. Now, my father was a very kind man. So my father, he was pretend. He would beat his chest in a pretend way. So he wasn't at all like, you know, Robert Duvall and the great Santini. We didn't grow up like that. We grew up with a guy who acted that way, but he was a teddy bear of a man.
Yes.
But the line was firm. We were driving one time, family vacation, things getting out of hand in the back of the car, three of us. My sister wouldn't stop. My brother and I were going at each other. Dad's veins are swelling in the neck. We're driving the corner of the Grand Canyon. He had just bought my sister this little like Indian Kachina doll. Everyone's yelling. No one's listening to him. He slams on the brake right in the corner of the canyon, gets out, opens the back door, grabs my sister's Kachina doll, runs to the edge of the canyon, and just throws it into the canyon, and the whole car just shut down. Then my dad just gets back in the car and drives. Dead silence.
Now,
as you know, people are probably horrified right now. As an adult, I'm going,
not the listeners of the show.
What he just did, he had one or two moments of absolute just losing it.
Yeah.
And that recalibrates the children.
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe. There were no words necessary.
No.
Screeching brake, dust flying everywhere. This hand just reached into the backseat. We all thought, he was going to grab one of us.
It's excellent symbolism that it's a little brilliant girl.
Now, to this day, he apologizes, and my sister says it's mostly damaging. And I go, do you understand what he did? He let you know that I'm retaking control. Of
yes.
This. Yeah. And it worked brilliantly.
Yes.
And you know what? You get over it.
Yeah.
And somewhere, there was an Indian at a campfire at the base of the Grand Canyon, and this Kachina doll came flying from the sky, and they thought the gods had dropped something. So it's a win-win for everybody here. And they're like, remember the time great God dropped Kachina doll from the sky? They don't know it was a pissed-off father. They're going, God damn it!
Trying to wrangle in his station wagon full of kids. I agree wholeheartedly in that I don't know yet, but there's a part of me that feels like maybe being overly sensitive to our quote-unquote kids' needs could kind of hurt them to a certain degree. Like, because my father was very similar to yours in that he had these moments where he would snap, but there's also these great aha moments that I've had where I was petrified of him as a young kid. Like, I was deathly afraid of him, but I never thought he didn't love me. Right. Never once did that enter my mind.
But I think that's the balance. The balance is communicate that it's always love. But here's the key. The children are going to outgun us, outrun us.
Yes.
They're like little terrorists that spend 24 hours a day studying your weaknesses, registering them, testing it when you don't know you're being tested. And then when the hole opens, they're like, how the hell did that happen? Because he's been staring at you for six straight weeks, plotting. So the key is, when I was an uncle, my sister would say to me, you know, my children don't know what to make of you. You're kind of an enigma.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, exactly.
Mission accomplished.
That's what I did as a father. You keep your children off balance.
Yep.
It's like when your children get comfortable, you shift the playing field. That's how the Marine Corps keeps the Marines in line. If you accomplish something, the drill instructor looks at you and said, well, guess what? That doesn't exist anymore. Yes, it does. I see it right there. No, it doesn't. It's gone. And you're like, well, how can I do this task without it? Well, figure it out. And so it's like, that way they are constantly looking to you as, and you make up the rule. I can't even begin to tell you the joy looking forward to those moments. And I'm going to go, this is my moment to throw my metaphorical Kachina doll into the metaphorical canyon of life. And when that moment comes, I will throw that thing so far and so fast. I want my children to sit around before I die and just go, remember the time, Dad?
Yes.
Go, yeah. And I want to go, remember the time I did that? That was pretty good. Me?
Right, because I feel like to a certain, I really do feel that those crazy things that my dad did, even that building of the tennis ball launcher and stuff like that, it strengthens our relationship now. And that's what I think my dad really did well, is that he wasn't necessarily worried about being my friend then. He was worried about just, you know, being hard on me, making sure that he set boundaries and everything, because he told me this, where I'm like, I feel like what I'm doing is nothing right now. I go, but I'm fighting. And I go, is it worth it long term? Like does it pay off? He goes, I think so. You know, after a while.
What I'm going to tell my son is at some point, I'm going to tell him, look, I have plenty of friends. I didn't have sex with your mother because I need more friends. We made you for a reason, because when I'm old and you're strong, I will guide you through many, many, many hard labor tasks. It'll be meaningless later on in life, but it's a service instructor. I just feel bad. You know what? I love my son.
Yeah.
But I'm not afraid to not be his friend.
No.
And I'm not afraid to do things under the guise of, you know, this is to teach you something. What? I'm not sure. But that's what I'm going to tell you.
Yep.
And then later on, I'll go, you know, I was wrong. He'll never know that. But maybe when I die, I'll have a list of things. I'll go, by the way, before I die, son, look, this stuff I made up.
Right.
Let it go.
I know without a shadow of a doubt, there are lessons that I pulled out of the crazy shit my father made me do that he had no intention. He just was like, I think it was kind of like your idea, even though he was never in the Marines or anything like that. He had this idea of, I got to throw something at him to get something out of him. Like, he just woke up one day and said, you're going to get a job. And I was 9. And then I remember sitting down, and now I go, wow, what a cool moment, because we sat down with the person who organized the paper out, and I signed my name or whatever. And when I put my birth date, she was like, wait, you're only 9 years old. And I went, yeah. She goes, I thought you were just small for your age. You have to be 12 to get a paper out. And like, she's pissed because she just killed an hour of her time for nothing. Now she still needs somebody else to throw papers in the morning. And my dad just looks at her without a hesitation and goes, put it in my name. I'll help him. And she was like, what? He goes, put it in my name if she has to be 12.
I'm 13. Put it in my name.
So she was like, are you sure? He goes, yeah, I'll help him. And he did. He woke up in the morning and he helped me till I was 12. And it worked out that I was big enough.
Yep.
And because he liked doing the exercise, and it was something that, and I had my own money, and I look back at it now, and I was like, he knew that it was important for me to have have a job and understand what it meant to work for something, to fight for something.
That's a smart saying. My father, when I had a paper out, what he enjoyed most about it was that my father would get up at like 5:30 in the morning to go outside in the garage to smoke a cigarette before he had to go to work. When my brother had a paper out, we had to get up before him and on our hands and knees folding our my father would get up with a sick look on his face like, look at you two. Up before dad, crack of dawn. There was a sick look in his face like, I get up at 5, but you get up at 4:30. And it was almost an evil pleasure to him.
Yeah.
But it was like, yeah, there's lessons in, but it was more like, what time did you get up? I get up at 5. And it made him sleep better knowing that before he got up, his two sons would wake up, open the garage, the guy would throw the truck, we're out there half awake, folding up our newspapers, and dad just woke up like, morning, boys, how's the job? And I was like, just a little less smile would be nice,
a little less rubbing it in.
In his credit, you know, we did have a, because we had a paper out too, Sunday papers are gigantic.
Oh.
And if you ever had a Sunday paper out as a kid, you know that with the bags, if you put the front back and they're like logs. If you miscalculate your load,
yep.
that by the time you pull the front paper out, realizing, oh my God, one too many, neck, back, flip. So after that first experience, we're like, you know, Dad, this, and we tried the pulling the paper, the wagon, but then you're like, it took forever.
Yeah.
So my father's like, well, you know, I'll help you out on Sunday. We had a 73 pinot.
Yeah.
Not bragging.
No.
And fill the hatchback up, and my dad flip open the back, and he would just drive slowly down the middle of the street. And my brother and I just running full speed behind and just grabbing and throwing. And so he would just sit there grinning and driving his car while his two boys running.
Just running their asses
all the
off.
Running around, yeah. throwing these things. And every now and then.
Sweating it for them.
And my dad would just, and he would just go around. His angle was, well, you know, I figured I'd help the boys out on Sunday. Yeah. Rather than going. So my choice was either potentially choke to death,
yeah.
carrying it on the paper up, or I got to chase a car. Yeah. So my brother and I decided we'd chase the car.
That would be fun. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's cool stories that came out. Like, I got pinned down by a Doberman pincher, but I learned this about, there's this new couple that moved in on the paper out, and they had this Doberman pincher that every morning would come running down the, and just bark, bark, bark. Well, and me, my father has an antagonistic relationship with animals, like, because he grew up on a farm. He doesn't see them as
right, exactly.
family
they're
members.
Not, they're they live outdoors.
Yes.
We coexist with them, but yes. we don't sleep with them.
But exactly. they have to serve a purpose. And yes. even if that purpose is just for him to taunt something, like a cat playing with a mouse. Like So I had that in me, but I wasn't as worldly as he was or as wise as he was at, you know, 10. So I would go, and the dog would come down, and I would tap the paper on the window, and the dog would just snarl at me, and I used to laugh, and then I'd throw the paper, and the dog would snarl at me, and I'd go like that to it and get on my bike. Well, one day, I came running down, and the dog came running, and they'd only been there like 2 weeks, and I see the guy in his trying to put his robe on, running down after the dog, screaming. I was like, what's this guy's deal? And I see the dog run, and then I just hear a like noise, and I go, and then you hear like you that sound, even if you have never grown up in the wild, there's something that you just hits you in your core when you hear a claw on concrete. Like I go, that dog is outside. I know it, even though I can't see it. And I went, and I started to turn, and just as I start to turn, here comes that Doberman Pinscher's, and he's just full bore, and I'm thinking, this dog has so much pinned up aggression for every day I've taunted him for the past 2 weeks, and this guy's yelling at me something, and I get the gate open, I try to shut it behind me, but there was no time, and then I there's a certain point where I get to my bike, and I realize I'm not going to get on the bike. There's no time. So I turn around carrying 80 pounds of papers and decide I'm going to fight this dog. So my dad, I'd seen him do this or maybe heard him talk about this where he's like, if you show a dog no fear, right. then they'll be afraid. So I just right. turn around at this dog and growled at it. But granted, I'm a 10 to a 12-year-old boy. So it's not, that comes out as a, like this prepubescent squeak.
I don't know how much fear a 10-year-old boy can put in a full-grown Doberman. Yeah, that's... I could,
So the dog leaps at me and is just sitting there going, like he's got me pinned. I'm like, At that point, I'm screaming for different reasons. And then I finally hear the guy go, he just wants the paper. And I go, so I pull the paper out and I give it out to the dog. Dog bites the paper, turns around and goes back inside.
That's hysterical.
But see, had my father not had this crazy idea of that, I wouldn't have this fun story.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have that great little life experience. And that's why friends here, especially in Los Angeles, not so much in Modesto where I come from. I think it might be a geographical thing.
Modesto.
But yeah, that's
Modesto,
where I grew. Yeah. So, but I feel like I do believe that kids need a little danger in their lives. Like, I think that it's good for them. Obviously, not to be unprotected or whatever, but and I know that people have differing opinions, and that's fine, but like I don't childproof my house. Now, I'm not saying that people who do are lazy or anything like that. I'm doing it for me. If I childproof my house, I know that there's nothing that I have to worry about what my kids are doing. So therefore, like if he leaves out of my sight, I'm like, oh, something's going on. Now, it's funny, as you can see right behind you, my 1-year-old is crawling downstairs.
It's totally fine. Totally.
He just learned that like 2 or 3 days ago, and now he thinks it's fun. And I still, when he goes up there and I can't see him, I go and I stand at the foot of the stairs. But my wife spent a good hour and a half teaching him how to go up and down the stairs.
Right,
and I know that there's some mom or somebody listening who's like, no, he could really hurt himself. And I know that on some level, I'm sure I'm asking for it, but that's just my way. As much as it is your way to do it that way, and not you as in you, James, I'm saying other
metaphorical
people.
Metaphorical you.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
looked at me when you said
I
that.
I did. So I realized.
Am I supposed to take that? not you, but I'm looking at you. How should I take that? You look through me? I don't know. I don't know when you're shifting gears.
I'm sorry, James. I'm sorry. It's a confusing medium.
The audience, you. It is. You're talking to me, but it's not for you. But you looked at me.
But yeah. I'm really glad. I'm really glad that you brought this up, too, because I do. I agree wholeheartedly. I like the idea of there being a little adventure, a little unknowing. Like, I do think that there's something to be said about your dad kind of messing with you a little bit, kind of throwing you off your balance.
I think it keeps the balance in check. I think it keeps a correct balance. There has to be an unexplained, his thing was because I said so, which is fine. I think I don't want to do that, but I want to communicate to my children that there could come a moment without explanation, for whatever reasons, I'm going to completely take over right now. And if you don't believe me, I will just start picking the things that matter and shutting them down one by one. So my father's theory was the greater evil. It's like, you can choose not to do this, but if you don't, you're going to have to deal with me. And I guarantee you, I'm a bigger problem than that. Yeah. So, and that is a very
like your brother, or
exactly,
yeah.
very realistic theory. And then, it's the okay, fine. Then I'm going to raise the pain stakes on this end to outweigh this. Now you have a whole new choice to make,
right?
And so that's the fun part.
Anybody listening who has teenagers, I find it hard to believe that you listened to the story about the doll being thrown into the Grand Canyon and wouldn't love to grab your kid's iPod Touch. You know, sans its value. Like, imagine if you didn't have to worry about replacing that value.
But you know what? Here's a perfect, not to interrupt. This is how this is how you do this, okay? There was a Marine Corps first sergeant. Replacement vet. The key is you need to have backup things that your children don't know exist. They're specifically designed for these moments.
So you buy somebody's broken iPad. I like it.
Exactly.
Little David Copperfield sleight of hand.
Exactly. So the point is, mission accomplished. But there was a first sergeant. He'd call Marines in. He had a little Marine Corps mug on the side. He would stand. He would yell at them. He'd scream at them. He'd pick up the mug. He'd throw it at their head. They'd move. It would explode on the side of the wall behind him. He'd tell them to get the hell out of their office. And then as soon as they leave, he'd call in the private. He'd come here. The private would sweep it up. They'd wipe the wall. He'd put a new mug in there. Call the next guy in. Every Marine thought that the first sergeant had lost his mind and threw a mug at him close range, and all he was, I got 15 mugs in here and I order them by bulk. The idea is, have these things ready.
It's worth it. For the release, the catharsis is worth the double down on the iPod Touch.
You've made your point.
Yeah.
And mission accomplished.
Yeah. Because I cannot explain to you just the idea of potential joy that I am feeling right now of being able to take some PlayStation Vita or little portable gaming system S thing and just hucking it out into a non-existent canyon of a world.
What I'm saying is, when you see me going around garage sales,
you know
what I'm not looking.
You're not antiquing.
No. What I'm doing, going, do kids like that? Will that be popular 5 years from now? I'm buying ammunition is what I'm buying.
That's the best. All right. Well, here's how we do, James. At the end of every episode, because it can kind of become a little bit of a bitch session, we wrap every episode up with a moment of the week. So we'll share like a touching moment that you had with your kids, something that they made them laugh or whatever that was you thought was cute. So I'll give you some time while we play this intro. I'll go first so you can think of your moment of the week. But here we go with moment of the week brought to you by Stitcher.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment.
Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher. The free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
So my moment of the week just came. We went up to visit family last week for my youngest son's first birthday. And my oldest, has a new thing where it's summer is coming. And as men, we can know that sometimes it can get a little swampy in the downstairs area. And so the way he tells you that this is a problem is he says, my penis is stuck to my leg. And he did it first at my parents' house. And my dad looked at him, and without a new moment of hesitation, goes, man, I'd love to have that problem.
I was about to say, I'm having that problem right now. very hot in here, and I'm glad that could be the moment of the week we can share. 12 little boys out there.
He also had a because he starts to kind of dance, and it looks like a pee-pee dance. Well, we're at my grandparents' house, and my grandparents are very religious, very conservative, but wonderful people from Texas, you know, good people. And so we're sitting at lunch. I bought lunch for them. We're sitting down, and then my son is moving around. My grandma goes, do you need to go to the bathroom or something? He goes, no. She goes, well, what's wrong? How come you keep moving around? And he goes, announces during lunch to the table, my penis is stuck to my leg. And my grandma goes, Jacob. And my grandma just goes, oh.
Does anyone else have something they'd like to share?
Exactly. Jack is laughing with us, and then as soon as James looks at him, he does like a shy head down, like he's very submissive.
My son does the same thing. He laughs because we laugh.
Yeah.
And then he laughs just to jump in. Then we laugh hysterically because he's laughing. And there's a giggle cycle.
It's a feedback loop.
Yeah. But then he'll stop first and just walk away.
Yeah.
Like it's like, oh, we're done. Oh, really?
Okay.
It's over.
Party's over. Everybody.
This laughing thing Parker's is so
done.
Boring.
It's so 30 seconds ago. And then with Jack, I had one too at the same visit. My grandfather has a pool table. And Jacob's favorite thing, he calls it bowling. He goes in, and this is what a lot of kids do. You just roll the balls around. It's hilarious, right, Jack? You were there. And so Jack, I put him up on the pool table when nobody else was around, and he thought it was great. He was rolling the balls around, and they're all around him, and they bounce off the walls and come. Well, he made one in a pocket. Well, it has those little rails that guide the ball back to the one end of the table. And it reminds me, like you were talking about, like Marine stuff, is that phrase, head on a swivel, like, right. You know what I mean, where the ball hits the thing, right. And then he hears the noise, and he looks down at it, and then it moves to his left, and he moves his head to the left, and then it hits behind him, and he turns around, like, what the hell is going on? We're surrounded.
Incoming, everybody. Hit the deck. That's funny.
So that was pretty adorable. So your turn now, James.
You know, this is a very simple concept. First time my son did this, my wife was in the other room. We're all on the other side of the house. And she's calling out to him. And, you know, Parker, come over. I said, Parker, go. Your mom's calling you. Go to your mother. And he's looked at me and he goes, hand. And he reaches his hand out. And he grabs my hand. He goes, come, Dada. And he just walked across the house with me, holding my hand, just walking through the whole house. And then he walks over to my wife and he gets her. He looks at me and he goes, bye-bye, Dada. And and I just stood there like, that was the coolest walk I've ever had in my entire life. And no, he just decided I was going to come with him.
Yeah,
but he just
down the hall.
Just walked me down the hall and then released me. And I was like, well, I guess my work is done.
But there is something that your son walking with holding the hand, that Hallmark type, you know, yeah. Almost Andy Griffith intro, like, thing. That is pretty cool.
That was very cool. I was awesome. Like, all right.
Well, that was our show. You could give us a call on the rant line, 408-228-4911, or send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Don't forget, if you're going to Amazon, to click on the Amazon banner on our website, because they give us a little money every time we send you there, and it doesn't cost you anything in advance. Another thing you could do to help spread the word about the show is if you go to thedadpodcast.com, click on your favorite episode, like, for instance, this one with James P. Connolly.
I'll be doing that as soon as I get home.
That's right. And you can share it on your Facebook wall with your Facebook friends, or you can email it to them if you have friends that don't have Facebook because they have MySpace or whatever it may be. My dates, I'm going to be in Huntington Beach July 20th and 21st. Then I'll be around in Southern California until September, when I am going to be in Sunnyvale, California at Rooster T Feathers, September 13th through 16th. And I'm going to be headlining at Flappers in Claremont on the 21st and 22nd of September. That's in Claremont, California. And a bunch of dates. All my dates are available at justincomedy.com. You can find James P. Connolly July 5th and 6th at the Comedy and Magic Club in Hermosa Beach, California, for our SoCal listeners. And July 12th through 14th, he'll be at Morty's Comedy Joint in Indianapolis. And during that weekend, you can also hear him on Bob and Tom. But for more information, in case you're listening to this in the year 2027, you can find him at JamesP.Connolly.tv. Just look at the description for the spelling on his name, or follow him on the Twitter at James P. Connolly. You can also like him on the Facebook. All of that stuff you could find at JamesP.Connolly.tv. Thank you so much for doing the show, James. Hope you had a good time.
I will, and it took us a year to put this together, so I'll go and try to create another human and come back. This is the only podcast where I feel pressure to go back and go, honey, let's do this.
Let's do this.
They're not going to have me back unless I have stories. So let's just do it.
And this show is a career changer. I think that's a given.
It's a career changer. It's
screw
a
that
changer.
Bob and Tom, whatever they're doing.
I was
going
to say, you can be on SiriusXM Radio, but once you've done the Dadcast,
it's over.
Yeah, it's all good, brother. It's all good. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you.
Talk about the thing that has dominated my life right now. It's made me understand the phrase, it's not about me. So love you, little guy.
On behalf of my good friend, James P. Connolly, this is Justin Worship saying, stay frosty.